You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 174 of the Talking Chop Podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland, back after a one-week absence, and joining me as frequently, the great Scott Coleman is here. What's up, man?
What's up, Brad? Welcome back. We missed you last week as Eric and I had to hold down the fort, and you were missed. So welcome back from almost 2 weeks in Vegas.
Yeah, I'm not sure I was actually missed. I got some, I think they were probably joking, but maybe not. Some people asked me never to come back, essentially, because they enjoyed the podcast with you and Eric. And I can't blame them. You guys did a good job. I did listen to that. That was a part of my very little, I would say, Braves consumption while I was gone. I was definitely in NBA mode, having been out there in Vegas to cover NBA Summer League for 11 straight days. You kind of lose track of all things when you're in that bubble. But I did get to enjoy the All-Star Game stuff, and we can start there real quickly before we'll definitely come back and talk about what happened on the field over the weekend with the Braves sweeping the Padres on the road, which, you know, the Braves don't usually go out to the West Coast to sweep teams, so that's very nice to see. We'll come back to that in a minute. First things first is the beginning of the week. I guess we could touch on the fact that the Futures game included a couple of Braves guys. Ian Anderson was out there, Christian Pache was out there, and just for the record, I know you're probably listening to this. If you are a fan of this podcast, you probably listen to Road to Atlanta as well, but those guys broke down their top 30 midseason Talkie Chop prospect list, and that's a good time for us to plug that right now as well, because it's awesome stuff. I candidly learn a lot from those prospect lists all the time, and I learn a lot about the Braves prospects from those guys. But anything you jump out to you on that list and or from the Futures game, because we don't often do prospects now that we have a prospect only podcast, but it's a good time to talk about it if we want to.
Yeah, I thought especially Ian Anderson, knowing that he was only going to pitch for an inning, he really let it fly was sitting mid-90s with his fastball and had a couple strikeouts, so he was really impressive. If you haven't looked at it, go back and check out the top 30 for Talking Chop. The guys broke it down in 1 through 30, scouting reports on everybody, what they're doing well, kind of a report card of sorts since the beginning of the year as to areas they've improved and where they've struggled, and guys who have rised up the list and guys who have fallen back a little bit. So, I cannot emphasize that enough. If you have any kind of interest in the Atlanta Braves, which I would assume you do listening to Brad and I ramble on, every Sunday night, be sure to go back and check those out, because it's a great resource, to have not only, in the moment, but down the line too. I always personally like going and seeing where guys were a year ago versus where they are now. See how guys, obviously Drew Waters is somebody who's really risen up, but then you also see somebody like Luis Gohara who has dropped off. So, really good stuff there from the prospect guys, so be sure to check that out.
Yeah, prospects are interesting. You mentioned Gohara. There's always, it's the ebb and flow with prospects, and I think I definitely err towards selling prospects when able to get major league talent versus the other side, which, that's kind of just the way that I see things, but I also draw the line. You have to draw the line somewhere, and part of that is just the way that these things turn over. The Braves have had a ton of graduations because of all the young guys that have come up, and that's a very good thing. The system's been stocked now for several years at this point in time. I know you and I will remember the Sean Gil Martin days. That's what I always refer to them as, when the system was a disaster. But now it's just kind of overflowing with talent, which is always a lot of fun. So please be sure to check out Road to Atlanta on this same feed, as well as all of the written content from our prospect guys, because it's the best in the business, if I do say so myself, and I learn a lot from them. All right, we can move off that for now. Let's talk about briefly the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game took place. I did get to watch the Derby because I was technically on a shift for Uproxx Sports that night, so I had a reason to leave the basketball arena and actually watch the Derby, which was a lot of fun, and Ronald Acuna was prominently involved. He did not win, which was not a huge surprise. He was not one of the betting favorites. He was somewhere in the middle based on where you looked ahead of time, but he did advance from round one and had a pretty interesting profile. He was one of the very few guys to hit the ball kind of to all fields, and that's kind of a reminder that his power is just so natural and effortless. And I think we all made the long swing jokes in advance of it, but he looked very good despite not winning. And Vlad Guerrero Jr. is just kind of a freak, even though he didn't win either, but that was a display of power that you will rarely see.
Yeah, it was fun to see Acuna go to all fields. I mean, who goes Oppo in home run derbies?
Ronald Acuna does a lot, apparently. He does. And center, yeah. And center a lot, too. It wasn't like it was just like spraying. There was the one, I remember this, too, from being in Vegas at the same time. Aaron Judge, when he won, went like almost purposely to right field a lot.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And it was just kind of bizarre to see. But like Ronald was just like hitting the ball wherever it was pitched. It was like he was taking BP, but just hitting the ball 450 feet every time. It was kind of jarring to watch him, how easy it was. I mean, he definitely got tired, but it was still quite a display, honestly.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to watch. And again, you know, it was kind of nice to see him not do anything different. You always hold your breath just a little bit whenever a young player goes to the Home Run Derby. And obviously he alleviated some of those concerns with homers on Friday and Saturday night. But it was a really impressive showing against, I believe, Josh Bell was the favorite in Vegas actually to win. If not the favorite, then right up at the very top. So for him to knock Bell out, and then you could tell, I mean, you look at how big, I mean, Josh Bell is a massive human being. Pete Alonso, who he ended up losing to, is a massive human being. You know, those guys have maybe 40, 50 pounds on Ronald. I think just after swinging however many times, it's not just swinging for a, you know, opposite field single, trying to hit a ball 400 plus feet. You could tell that Ronnie was a little bit tired, but it was a lot of fun. I think I didn't research this, but a couple people said it was the first time ever that a Brave had advanced in the Home Run Derby. Which is pretty fun.
I hadn't heard that, but I guess I believe you now that you say that. Yeah. I'm trying to remember a time when I've had any rooting interest in the Home Run Derby, and I can't remember time. So maybe that's why. I don't know.
And you know, Freddie did it a few years back, and he didn't do super well. And then, you know, dating back, so yeah, it's been a while since the Braves have even had somebody with a real chance in the Derby.
I mean, there was a little bit of a groundswell that said, you know, Austin Riley might be good in the Home Run Derby because he's more of that big beefy guy that usually does well. So maybe next year, if he continues to rake a little bit, he'll sneak his way in there. But I mean, for the first time in a while, they do have some actual. I mean, Freddie's obviously a power hitter, but Freddie's not the kind of pure power hitter. Like, he's one of those just awesome hitters. He's not the kind of guy that you would envision as a Home Run Derby guy necessarily. So now they have some more, I guess, the objectively long swing of Ronald Acuna and Austin Riley is just pure power. But maybe those guys will make a dent one of these years.
Yeah, and it's, you know, again, you talk about having a real rooting interest. Unless you're putting money on the Home Run Derby, it's hard to get really into it. But this year's Derby was incredible. I mean, I know, of course, everyone remembers what Josh Hamilton did maybe a decade ago at Yankee Stadium. For my money, it's the best one since then. The second round battle between Vlad Jr. and Jock Peterson was incredible. The people in Cleveland, if you ponied up for the All-Star weekend experience, you were treated very nicely, because that was as good of a Home Run Derby as we've ever had.
For sure. And some Monday night entertainment, because that's the quiet part about this week that we just covered is that there isn't too much going on. I mean, I was obviously in the the NBA Summer League was existing, but those games don't really matter. I mean, there are some young guys you people want to see. But other than like WNBA and Wimbledon, there wasn't a lot of sports happening Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, other than the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game, which was Tuesday. I candidly did not see the All-Star Game. I did get to catch the clip of Freddie Freeman being mic'd up against Justin Verlander, which was amusing and fun. And Mike Soroka appeared, but there wasn't too much to take away from the All-Star Game. Did you happen to catch the Freddie mic'd up experience? Because that was probably the best part of the night for the Braves.
Yeah, absolutely. It was hilarious. I think it almost made Verlander a little mad, him just being such a competitive dude. You know, Freddie going up and telling him that the booth is going to tell him what pitches are coming and all that was a lot of fun. Yeah, I mean, nothing too crazy. Ronald Acuna got a filthy breaking ball from, I think it was Jose Barrios from the Twins who struck him out. But yeah, other than that, nothing too crazy. And again, it was a fairly calm and quiet. I mean, it was like less than 3 hours you could hear after the game with Buck and Smoltz in the booth when they said it was under 3 hours, like 2 hours and 52 minutes. Yeah, they were just kind of amazed because those games do have a tendency to get a little crazy and to run long. So, yeah, nothing too much from the All-Star game. But as you said, there's just not a whole lot else going on this time of year once baseball hits the little week-long hiatus. So it was fun to see the guys out. Mike Soroka, as you said, worked a 1-2-3 inning. Wasn't super sharp, and just coming into the middle of a game like that in the fifth inning or whatever it was cannot be easy. But he made it through the inning without giving up any base runners. So it was a good time all the way around.
Yep, that's a win. And we can move on to some actual Brave stuff. That's kind of all peripheral in nature to this point. But there were a couple of news and rumors that we wanted to hit on at least briefly and touch on them. Anthony Swarzak is back, and Grant Dayton is on the IL now with a broken toe. Apparently that was broken in interesting manner, playing catch. He's going to be out for a month. Not a huge loss because Dayton is definitely one of the low men on the totem pole, but the Braves need all the arms they can get, to be honest with you. There's a little bit of buzz that they're going to be back, definitely in the running for some bullpen arms in the coming weeks. We are 2 weeks out-ish from the trade deadline, which we'll get to in a second as well. But what did you make of that, if anything? And Swarzak was really good before he came back, so you kind of hope he's going to keep it going. But other than that, I don't have a grand takeaway there.
No, it's too bad for Grant Dayton, who spent the last brutal 2 years recovering from, I believe, Tommy John. So, when we first heard that Dayton was going to the IL with a broken toe, everyone kind of laughed and thought it was Anthopoulos doing his roster manipulation again in order to get a guy back on the roster. But I mean, yeah, if he really did break his big toe playing catch with Chad Sabatka, of all people, who throws pretty hard.
That hurts, by the way. Broken big toe is extremely painful. I did that, actually. I think it was in ninth grade playing basketball. Toe injuries, you can't do a lot for them, but they really, really hurt. Like, it's not even, I can't express to you how much that hurts to have to put any pressure on a broken toe. So I identify with what he's going through, even as a non-professional athlete that I am. Right. It hurts
let alone landing on that foot to try to throw a 95-mile-an-hour fastball all over the plate. Yeah, so it's too bad. I thought Dayton had been pretty solid in his limited duties this year. And as we talked about, Anthony Swarzak has been so good, was good again on Saturday night. He made his first appearance and was able to get out of a little bit of a jam with a strike him out, throw him out, double play, and you just hope his shoulder holds up. But yeah, nothing too crazy. You talk about a fairly slow week for news, or at least legitimate news, reportable news, if you will. But yeah, it's good to get Anthony back, and hopefully Dayton's able to come back and then be a fresh arm in September.
Yeah, you mentioned a slow news week. That comes with the territory with only three games, and we're saving the games for the end, so they are coming, I promise. But on the rumor front, there were two like semi-rumblings that hit this week, and it's going to pick up for sure because we're 15 days out now, 16 days out from the trade deadline. But there was I'm not even sure I would call it a rumor with Marcus Stroman of the Blue Jays. He's been tied to the Braves several times, including last year before the deadline, and then over in the winter as well. Apparently, there was some reporting, but from non-national sources about Stroman potentially being a target of the Braves. That would not surprise me. There was a lot of doubling down though from the beat guys that are on the Braves beat, and John Heyman, basically writing off that as completely fictional. Essentially, I would be skeptical of anything pro or con on any of these rumors right now, because if you remember, the Dallas Keuchel signing happened, and like 2 days before that, all the beat writers were saying it was not a chance going to happen. They were definitely like closing the door on it, and then it happened 2 days later. So Anthopoulos is someone who works in the shadows, and I kind of don't believe anything unless it's from like Ken Rosenthal, basically, or maybe Jeff Passan. Those would be the two guys that I would say like I definitely believe. Everything else, I'm sure it's being reported. If it's from a national guy or one of the beat guys, it's coming from somewhere. They're not just making stuff up. I can't speak for the guys who are not credentialed reporters that kind of throw things against the wall occasionally. But if it's from one of our guys or one of the national guys, they're not just saying it for no reason. But at the same time, my guard is up on all rumors. We'll do Stroman first here, and then there's one more that I want to touch on. What do you make of Stroman as a target? I mean, this is not something that we're obviously not breaking any news here, but do you think he's interesting? Because he hasn't been that good, but at the same time, he would be better than what the Braves have available, and he's still kind of young and has been just tagged with the Braves so many times that at some point it feels like it might happen. I don't know. It's just kind of weird.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Marcus Stroman. I think if I had to rank all of the starters who could maybe get traded over the next 2.5 weeks, he would be pretty high at the top of my list for a couple reasons. One, you mentioned he's 28, and more importantly, he has another year of control next year. He has his final year of arbitration in 2020, which is important. I think if you're going to have to give up a significant piece to get a player, you certainly like to have more than just the 2+ months of control on him. I think it's not hard to just kind of come to some conclusions as to why he would be better getting out of Toronto after all these years. I mean, you think about one pitching in the Rogers Center on that turf where you just see ground balls just fly once they're hit. He's a sinker ball guy. I think he's number two in ground ball rate in the major leagues this year and has been for years.
He has a career ground ball rate of 60%, which is for a starter is just outrageous. It's very, very high.
And you know, the Blue Jays, not a great defensive team. You think about the differences there. You put him on the mound behind, or with Freddie, Ozzie, Dansby, and Donaldson behind him is a really strong infield defense. You know, I'm not overly familiar with Toronto's front office, but I do think the Braves are one of the leading teams and as far as analytics and using those numbers to better their pitchers. So I think that's an area where he could grow a little bit. And really, he's been remarkably consistent. You look here, the last 5 years, he's had a FIP. And again, I used FIP, of course, because he's in a tough division in a ballpark that's really tough to pitch in. But the last 5 years, his FIP is 3.54, 3.71, 3.90, 3.91, and it's down to 3.71 today after pitching pretty well against the Yankees. So again, he's not an ace. I mean, this isn't Max Scherzer. If they do decide Stroman's the guy, it's not Max Scherzer they're getting, but I do think he's proven to be a really reliable number three starter. And for the reasons I just kind of laid out, I do think there's some upside with him, especially as he's, as you said, in his late 20s. It's not a guy who's in his mid 30s or anything like that.
Yeah, the control is interesting, and it's kind of funny. You know, last year people were definitely going to circle, and I saw a little bit on Twitter with people analyzing the potential move, that last year Stroman only had 19 starts and had a 5.54 ERA. That's not great, obviously. But his peripherals are almost the same this year as they were last year, and his ERA is down more than two full runs. So I'm inclined to say that last year was kind of a outlier in some ways. I'm with you that he's not going to be a dominant ace. I think his career numbers are about what you can expect. A 3.81 ERA, 3.65 FIP in his career. That's a very solid, like you said, number three starter-ish kind of pitcher. And at his age, on his control, that would really help the Braves in a lot of ways. So, I mean, obviously nothing firm on that one, but I wanted to at least touch on it because it at least came to light. We got asked about it a few times, so I wanted to reference it a little bit here. We'll come back to Stroman if there is anything else that comes with some more fire to the smoke.
The Braves did have a scout at his start in New York today, don't put too
whatever
much
that means.
Stock
yeah.
into a scout at a start. I mean, those guys live out of suitcases all month long. They're bouncing around seeing everybody pitch. But no, it's worth mentioning nonetheless.
For sure. That's something we should at least keep in mind. And it's not nothing. I'm not sure what it means, but it could be something, I suppose. The other guy that was at least rumored to the Braves at some point this week was Matthew Boyd of the Tigers. The Detroit News reported that the Braves are a team with interest in Matthew Boyd. He is a lot less famous than Marcus Stroman, but a 28-year-old left-hander. His career numbers are not exactly outstanding, but three straight years now with two Fangraphs WAR or more, and this year he's having his best year of his career. Already a 3-win player this season with a sub-4 ERA, 12 strikeouts per nine and 1.89 walks per nine. A 6-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio is pretty darn good in 19 starts. I'm not sure how sustainable that is, but he's a very solid pitcher. That doesn't have the same track record that Stroman has, but he also has arb control for 3 more seasons after this one. So that makes him even more interesting in some ways. He's very cheap right now, $2.6 million for this season, and again, 3 more arbitration years. He's not as sexy as Stroman, but there was actually, you know, more firm reporting from a real source that it's a local paper, but it's still someone who is a credentialed media member reporting interest there. So what do you make of Matthew Boyd as a target? I know Braves fans, I can already hear Braves fans kind of like rolling their eyes right now, but he would be better than what they have in that spot right now. Like, he's better than Julio Teheran, for instance.
Yeah, he's a fascinating guy. I mean, as you said, his coming into this year, his career ERA and FIP were north of 5. So he was effectively a fifth starter innings eater for a bad Tigers team. This year, you mentioned he has the crazy strikeout numbers. He doesn't walk people. Where he's getting killed right now, and the reason he's not a Cy Young winner or a Cy Young candidate, is he's getting killed by the home run ball. Yep. It's almost, I think it's one of the highest rates in all the majors right now, actually. And after he was basically unhittable in April and May, but since the start of June, he hasn't been great. Again, his ERA is in the upper fours. But again, it's purely home run driven. So I think it's a bit of a risk and a gamble that a team has to take if the Tigers decide to trade him. One, is the home run problem correctable? And I never know. I think part of it is pitchers have some control over home runs, but I also think that big league hitters are good at their jobs, and with a juiced ball, it's going to happen. But as you said, the real thing here is there's 3 more years of arbitration. So you're getting him for 3.5 seasons. Maybe he becomes Chris Sale 2.0. Maybe the really good first 2 months of 2019 he had were more of a fluke and a flash in the pan. And all of a sudden, you've just given up multiple top prospects, because I think that's what's ultimately going to take to get him. All of a sudden, you've given up 3 guys in your top 12 or so in order to get a guy who had a career ERA above 5 this season. So if he does get traded, whether it's the Braves or not, I'm fascinated to see what the market will be for him. He's somebody who I think, again, you get him in a front office that's a little more analytically inclined. I think there's room for growth. And again, he's only 28, but it's a pretty significant risk compared to somebody like Marcus Stroman. He have a pretty good idea of what you're going to get compared to, you know, a guy who has incredible stuff, but just hasn't quite put it all together over a full season just yet.
Yeah, I mean, just for some reference point, he was terrible when he first came up, but I have the numbers pulled up now from his last, you know, 3.5 seasons, basically since the start of 2016. So, you know, the last 4 seasons, but this year is only a partial season. His ERA is 4.55, which is not what you want to see. Obviously, 4.3 FIP, but you know, 8.4 Fangraphs WAR. So he's averaging more than 2 per season. That's not anything to balk at, and he's been very durable as well. I mean, 96 starts in the last 3.5 seasons. So he's basically not been a issue staying on the field. Solid strikeout to walk rate. The home run rate is too high, as you referenced, but he's someone who I think if the Braves traded for him would be quite a divisive figure before he even made a start. He's one of those guys that the numbers like the more advanced numbers like a lot more than the ERA numbers do, and that is a usual line in the sand with his fan base. There was some stuff this weekend about some numbers that were more advanced that people like retracted from, that they really did not like whatsoever, compared to just the more traditional stats, and the traditional numbers do not love Matthew Boyd, whereas the advanced numbers kind of do. So interesting pitcher to keep an eye on, to be sure. He would definitely help, and the ARB stuff is very interesting. The control is, you know, probably the most interesting part of Matthew Boyd, honestly, but we'll see if there's any more noise on that one. But I thought it was worth discussing, because that was more of a rumor, in my opinion, than the Stroman was, even if it's less sexy in nature. So,
you know, it's funny, the same guy who reported the Braves and a couple other teams had interest, he made a note too that was curious, that the Tigers are obviously coming out of a rebuild or in the middle of a rebuild, and you have this asset in this 28-year-old pitcher, and all of a sudden the teams that are reportedly interested are the Astros, the Rays, the Braves, all teams that are very analytically inclined,
the smart teams. Yeah.
So it might even make Detroit go, wait a minute, maybe we don't want to give away this guy. You know, what are they seeing that we're not? There's a reason. You know, it's all of a sudden, if one team's interested, that's something. But if 3 or 4 teams who are all kind of from the same mold, if you will, are interested in a guy, then maybe it does give them a little bit of pause and says maybe we should hang on to him for another year or two and see what we have.
Yeah, that'll be one to monitor. I think, you know, they probably will trade him based on where they are and what I've heard. But, you know, it kind of depends on where you want to stack up the value and who wants to, I guess, probably pay market value or overpay for him. That's usually what it takes to get a guy under control for this long. And maybe it'll be the Braves, maybe it won't be, and we'll see what happens. All right, Scott, we'll take a quick break here, and we'll come back to talk about the on-field stuff from this weekend. So here's a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, man, we're back. And, you know, a three-game sweep in San Diego, which does not happen. I mentioned this earlier on the podcast, but the Braves don't often go, particularly in San Diego, but really anywhere on the West Coast, to just sweep teams. And coming out of the break with three wins, you can't really ask for more than that. Just for a big picture standpoint, the Braves are now 20 games over 500. They have a seven-game lead on the Nationals in the National League East, 8.5 games on the Phillies. Washington and Philly play each other over the weekend. That was a pretty interesting series. There was some choke jobs along the way from Philly. But other than that, I mean, obviously in great shape. There's still like four and a half games, depending on where the Dodgers play tonight, behind the Dodgers for the best record in the National League, which might be out of reach. But they are a very, very clear number two team right now in the National League based on the standings. And, you know, you can't really ask for more than going on the road, taking care of business. It's a team that they're better than, but the Padres are not terrible by any means. So going there and winning three straight games off of a 4-day break is honestly pretty impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was the first time since 2011 that the Braves won a series in San Diego.
That's a long time.
And it's not like the Padres have been the Dodgers where it's like, yeah, well, they've been really good for the last 8 years. Of course, they're going to struggle. I mean, they've had some really bad teams over those years. And the Braves, I mean, I know personally I've been in San Diego a couple times and the Braves were in town and it just, things did not go well. It was one of those parks, kind of like Chase Field used to be too, where one of those parks where just everything would seemingly go wrong. But yeah, to start out the second half with a sweep and to go out west, I think other than that one makeup game in Colorado, I think they're done with the West Coast at this point. Actually, I don't think they're going to – somebody said the other day, and I apologize for not remembering who it was, but I think the farthest west they have to go is maybe Minnesota at this point. Does that sound right? I know they still have the Twins.
I'm looking now as you talk. Yeah, I mean, Kansas City, Milwaukee, Minnesota – they're home for the Dodgers. They go to Colorado for that one game that you referenced in August, but that's it. Yeah. I mean, yeah, everything else is, I mean, I guess Kansas City is out that way, and that's the second to last series of the year. They have a two-gamer in September in Kansas City, but yeah, not a lot going on. I mean, literally one game against the National League West the entire way, and it's a bizarre cross-country road trip to play one game, and they could maybe, like, honestly, if the Braves are in a comfortable spot by then, you could see a weird roster for that game, because it's just, we talked about that when it happened, when the Colorado rain out, snow out, whatever it was, happened. We were like, well, that's bizarre. Now they have to go from New York to Colorado back to Toronto in one day. And that could be a 17-man roster making the trip to Colorado.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll, it's one of those, just send the starting pitcher and five relievers and you say, all right, we're going to try to win this one and keep everybody else going towards Toronto. I mean, they'll send the whole team, of course, but
sure.
No, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Anybody that needs a day off, they might just leave. Yeah. Might just leave in New York and get creative with some of the roster situation on that one. So we'll see.
Yeah. But yeah, to go again, you know, get back to it. Yeah. To sweep a good, young, exciting Padres team. You talk about teams that are on the right trajectory. They almost feel the Braves never had their kind of step up season. They went from being bad to the 90 wins. Of course, this feels like a year where the Padres are, the young guys are kind of figuring it out a little bit. They're going to get a couple contracts off, I think, this year and next for the Padres, a team that this time next year, I'm going to guess they are considerably above 500 versus now being three games below. But yeah, to come out and win three games, all of which were pretty entertaining and pretty thrilling, was a big start for the second half.
For sure. We start with Friday. Dallas Keuchel pitched well. Cruised for seven innings. His ERA looks good. His peripherals are kind of funny. Like, Keuchel is always been, I don't know, is always going to be an extremely low strikeout pitcher, but so far this year, in his five starts with the Braves, he has a 4.78 strikeout per nine, which is like comically low for a starting pitcher. And as a result of that, his peripherals are not great. But you look up, and it's 3.09 ERA and five starts, and that's exactly what you're looking for from Dallas Keuchel. Just be solid to good, and he's been solid to good, and that's why they signed him. That's basically, like, that was the big story from Friday night is, you know, other than Josh Donaldson doing Josh Donaldson things, and he's been very good as well, but Keuchel just making things easy on the Braves is why you sign him.
Yeah, and I think I wrote the recap on Friday night, and it's just, again, nothing. I'm first in line to see the young kids who can throw 100 with the big sliders and big curveballs, but, you know, to watch Keuchel go out there and sit mid-upper 80s for 100 pitches, it's the third start in a row. He's gone seven innings. You mentioned the ERA is 3.09, some of which wasn't even necessarily his fault because of two of those runs were Chad Sabatka's problem because he gave up a homer a couple starts ago. But yeah, I mean, he's been great. It helped save the bullpen. Even if the bullpen's rested, as we would see on Saturday and Sunday, a lot of them had to be used. So he was impressive. And again, you touched on Josh Donaldson, who had the two homers, and Acuna also had one. It was a nice, fun showing all the way around.
Yeah, Ronnie announced that he was just fine after the home run derby on Friday night. By the way, Donaldson, we talked about him. He had two homers on Friday. He hit another one on Saturday. At this moment, this is your weekly Josh Donaldson update. He's on pace for like a 4.5 win season. Like, he's been really good. We would say that all season long, but he's been even better lately, to the point where, you know, 128 WRC plus. He's been durable. He's been on the field. He has power. His defense has been good. I hope / think that the hate has subsided a little bit. Every once in a while, I still see some, like, they should trade Donaldson for a pitcher stuff. And it's like, guys, no. Like, I tweeted still while happening. I was in Vegas. It was one of those, like, tweet and then get away from the computer for several hours. But I tweeted that Donaldson could be shut down the rest of the season right now and will have earned his contract. And people got mad at me. And I was like, guys, look at what he's done. He's already sitting at 2.5 wins in mid-July. Like, he's been awesome. Like, there's no debate here whatsoever. If there is a debate, like, I don't want to be having it with you. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, like, who are you arguing against? I'm not really sure at this point, but there's people out there who still are disappointed in Josh Donaldson. You can't be anymore. He's been awesome.
Yeah, no, he's been great. You think about protecting Freddie Freeman in the middle of the order. And again, everyone, a couple of Padres fans are on Twitter this weekend watching the series. And, you know, it's like, God, this lineup is insane. I mean, you have Ozzie Albies hitting, I think that night it was eighth. You have Donaldson crushing in the fourth spot. Freddie being great, Acuna, I mean, so on and so forth. But yeah, he's been really, really good. And in a time where a couple other guys, before Freddie's big home run in the eighth inning today, you know, Freddie had been scuffling a little bit, but when you have Donaldson hitting behind him and picking up the slack, and then in 2 weeks when Donaldson calms down, well, then you'll have Freddie pick it up, and then Acuna, and then Dansby, and Ozzie. I mean, it's been that way all year long, even if the whole lineup isn't clicking, which, other than like that 1 week homestand where they scored 10 runs every night, there's always only been two or three guys carrying the load. But when you have this deep of a lineup and this good of a lineup, that's how you're going to win games. So it was really fun to see Josh got off to a good start, and like you said, he's on pace for one of his best seasons ever, which is saying something considering he's been an MVP candidate those couple years in Toronto.
I mean, to your point about the lineup, this is nothing new if you are following this Braves team, but, you know, the two worst spots in the lineup this season are catcher, where Flowers and McCann are both like slightly below league average in terms of their WRC pluses. They've both been just fine for catcher. You know, catchers are generally bad across the league, so the Braves still have a better than average duo at catcher, but pull those guys in for just league average production or something like that. And then Markakis has a 108 WRC plus. Like, he's not been bad. He hasn't been particularly great. Like, he's sitting there with, I think, like 0.5 Fangraphs WAR in mid-July. But if he's your worst regular outside of catcher, you're in great shape, and that's where the Braves are right now. Even guys who have been hot and cold, like Ozzie and Dansby, are sitting here with like 110, 112 WRC pluses, and that's really good for your middle infielders that are good, on defense and do other stuff for you. So it's kind of a ridiculous lineup, and that's even with Austin Riley cooling off, and like guys can afford to be like you said, can afford to be a little bit hotter and colder, based on the fact that there's usually somebody that has it going at that particular moment. And it's now a full blown strength. Like, we talked about this before the season started. I'm not sure either of us thought that the lineup was going to be this. And it's been better than advertised. And that's a big reason why the Rays are where they are, because the pitching has not been, as we talked about ad nauseum, other than Mike Soroka, the pitching has not been lights out this season. And they're still in this fantastic spot in the standings. And that's a lot of that's just the offense being really good all year long.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, it's truly amazing. I mean, the fact that we're sitting here, Folty's been bad, Gausman was bad, inconsistent Max Fried, inconsistent Julio Teheran, even Keuchel wasn't great in his first start or two, and the fact they're 20 games up and have a 7-game lead on Washington, 8.5 on Philly. I mean, it's amazing. You think, wow, if, and again, this is a little bit more of an if, but if they can get Folty or Gausman back to being even close to their normal selves, or if they go out and add somebody in the next 2.5 weeks at the deadline who can help the front line of the rotation, yeah, it's pretty crazy to think just how high of a ceiling this team has, which, you know, nothing against last year, but I think after, by the time August and September rolled around, I don't know, I don't want to speak for everybody, but I don't think too many people were penciling the team in for the World Series. But no. Right now, if you're telling me that the Braves are going to be in the World Series in 3 months, I think it's at least a legitimate possibility. Now, not to go down that road too much, the Dodgers are still really good. Seems like the Cubs are figuring it out.
Yeah, even the Dodgers are better. The Dodgers are better than the Braves. They are, but it's a series, and you know this team this year versus the team last year. I think people like you and me were, you know, we wanted to be optimistic about the series last year against the Dodgers, but at the same time, you looked at what the Dodgers had in their roster, and it was impossible to pick the Braves in that series. Could they have won? It's baseball, sure, but it's a little closer now than it was then. I still think the Dodgers are better top to bottom. That's not really controversial. They have a better record. I think they have a better roster, but the gap is smaller, which is good. And honestly, I mean, the standings kind of say this as well, obviously, but is there a team? I mean, maybe the Cubs. Maybe the Cubs would be the team that you would pick over the Braves in a series other than the Dodgers. But other than that, I mean, it doesn't exist. The Braves are better than everybody else's. They just are. And we'll see what the pitching looks like. But for now, this has not been a fluke. I mean, it's kind of funny. I'm looking at the Fangraphs page right now. The only pitcher on this team right now that has more than 1.4 Fangraphs WAR is Mike Soroka, and that is not usually the recipe in mid-July for a team that is in this kind of shape. Like Max Fried has cooled off to, so now he's sitting 1.4 Fangraphs WAR with a 4.29 ERA. It's pretty high for him after what he did early on, but Kevin Gausman, Julio Teheran, Sean Newcomb, Dallas Keuchel now is obviously on pace to be better than that potentially, but a late start. And you look down and you find Folty. Like, this is not the Fangraphs pitching page of a team that's supposed to win 95 games. And that's where the Braves are now, which is just, again, a testament to the lineup and a testament to how good Soroka's been too. But yeah, just, I mean, they're just better than we thought they were going to be. And that's totally fine with me. I'm on board. Don't get me wrong. But
it's fine.
I'm looking to be wrong, it's fine, which is fine. I'm good with that.
Well, and I think last year it was more than enjoy the ride. I mean, nobody expected them to win 90 last year, and
100%.
I think even until like, you know, that first or second week of September when the Phillies started to fall off, I think everyone kind of had their guard up, and they're like, okay, this is a young team. Everybody thought 2019 was going to be the year. We're a year ahead of schedule. You know, when are we going to have this heartbreak? And it never happened. And the Braves went on to win the division pretty comfortably with a week to go. And obviously the NLDS didn't go super well, but they won a game and they were at least competitive in two out of the three losses. But this year is different. I know Mark Bowman, who, you know, front page of the Braves.com website, said this is probably the first year since 2003 where if the Braves don't make the World Series, it'll be viewed as somewhat of a disappointment. Now, I'm not quite to that level. If they can win the NLDS and then lose a good series against the Dodgers, I'm not going to, you know, lose it. But I think this is truly the first time, and frankly, I mean, that's 15 years ago, that assuming, you know, you don't know how the next 2.5 months are going to go, injuries are going to happen, performance is going to vary. But I think we're at the point now, especially at 20 games up on July 14th, 15th, whatever today is, that if they don't win a playoff series for the first time since 2001, there's going to be some legitimate, you know, what's wrong here with the team.
Yeah, I'm looking now, since you mentioned that, at the baseball reference page for the Braves. And, you know, since 2003, which is the year that you referenced, that Bowman's referencing, the Braves have won 96 games twice. They won 96 in 2004 and 96 in 2013, and then lost in the first round both those times. By the way, how about that run? And this is my high school days, from 2002 to 2004. They lost three consecutive LDSs in 5 games. Like, that is so brutal, which I almost forget sometimes. But, I mean, yeah, no series win since 2001, which is still, like, just comical to think about, but it's the truth. But even then, they have a chance. I wouldn't predict this at this moment in time, but they have a better win percentage right now than they have in any season since 2003. They're sitting here with a better than 600 win percentage. They're on pace, just pure pace, for more wins this season than they've accumulated in any season since I was a junior in high school. So, yeah, that's a long time ago. I'm not a junior in high school anymore. So, I mean, at the very least, and again, like, I'm with you more than Bowman, I think, on this one, where I think you cannot expect this team to make the World Series based on the presence of the Dodgers. They're just better than the Braves are right now. But winning a playoff series is now the baseline expectation, which is that's changed a lot since the beginning of the season. We came into the year, I'll speak for myself anyway, we came into the year saying, you know, the Braves could certainly win this division, but I wasn't, like, loudly picking them to win the division. Like, the Phillies did a lot, the Nationals were still talented, etc. And now, in the period of 3 months, they've gone from maybe winning the division, maybe not, to they better win a playoff series. And that's a big jump to be talking about, but it's just the reality of the situation now where expectations are high, and that also provides the potential for heartbreak, like you referenced a minute ago, but that's where we are, man. They're winning games in an alarming... They're 20 games over 500 in July. Like, that doesn't happen very often, at least recently.
No. And I agree with you as of today. That you look at the Dodgers roster, I think they have more depth. I think the rotation is better, especially in a short playoff series. But they're at least closing the gap. And there was such a big gap we saw as the Dodgers were playing matchups all year. And we had that horrible bench in the NLDS last year. You know, now that's not the case. If you have to go to Matt Joyce, who had a big hit today, if you have to go to Matt Joyce in a pinch hit spot, you feel good about it. Charlie Culberson, I mean, every night he seems to do something good.
The bench is a real thing now, where it was not a real thing in October of 2018. It just wasn't. It was terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And who knows? I'm not sitting here predicting that Ender comes back and does anything great, but you know, he's been a good hitter for 5 or 6 years. He's a three-time Gold Glove winner. He's historically been a better hitter in the second half. I don't know, maybe they bring him back and they start giving Austin Riley a little bit of time off, who's been struggling. You at least have options, and I think if the Braves should face the Dodgers at any time in the playoffs, it's even the most rose-colored glass fan is, oh boy, this might be tough. First, you know what, If a few things bounce their way and they catch a couple breaks and they keep hitting, it would not be impossible to beat the Dodgers. But I just don't think that was necessarily a likely scenario last year. So it's been a lot of fun to see them kind of get closer and closer. As you said, they're 4 games back of the Dodgers right now. To at least be in that conversation, I think, speaks a lot.
I totally agree. And just to wrap things up a little bit on that discussion, the Braves are now currently at this moment on pace for 98 wins. Mm. Whew. I think I'd take the under just because they just won 3 in a row to kind of buoy that percentage up a little bit and the projection up a little bit, but it's not crazy. That's all I'll say.
No.
Anyway, any other thoughts on the rest of the weekend? I mean, the Braves had a couple of memorable catches. The Marquez catch on Saturday night got a lot of pub. The Acuna catch today against Machado at the wall got a lot of pub in the fifth inning. Obviously, Soroka was great today, and they get the 4-1 win. Anything that you want to touch on that we haven't done over the weekend, or should we wrap up with where we are?
No, I mean, I think we were good. Yeah, that Marquez, I was unable. It was my fiance's birthday on Saturday, so I was unable to. I was following the game on Twitter and on the MLB app for the final 3 innings, and it was just, you can imagine knowing how crazy Saturday night's game was to catch that on
back and forth and back and forth all night long. That was a crazy one.
MLB app, yeah. So. But no, I mean, it's again, the tough schedule continues. They're going to go face a Brewers team, though. All year long, this is probably the worst the Brewers have played. They got stomped again by the Giants. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Giants this weekend and needed a comeback win on Saturday in order to not get swept.
They've lost 7 of 9, by the way, at this moment, the Dodgers. I mean, the Brewers have.
Yeah, they're strong. I mean, they are, and it's the team that was so good last year. They won 99 games, won the division. They have some serious problems and looking ahead. They will see Brandon Woodruff on Tuesday night, who's been really, really good. I believe he was an all-star if memory serves. But other than that, it's a series that you want to get at least one. And if you can't get take another series, it'd be really nice. And then obviously a upcoming 4-game home series with the Nationals would be pretty huge.
Yeah, I mean, a full week, which is nice. If for those of us that enjoy watching baseball, having 7 straight days of the game is nice. 3 in Milwaukee, 4 home with Washington. By the way, the national series has back-to-back national TV games. Saturday night's on FS1, and then Sunday night is ESPN, 7 o'clock. So some later nights on the East Coast. In terms of the podcast recording, I'm not 100% sure when we will record next week, because it'll either be late night after the game on Sunday night, or it'll be Monday, because the Braves are off on Monday the 22nd. So either I'll record Sunday night or Monday, depending on my schedule, and I have some travel coming up. But one of those days I'll have a podcast. So within the next 8 days or so, we'll have a new show. And as always, this time of year, if the Braves pull off a high-profile trade, I will try to do an emergency podcast. So yep. Marcus Stroman is traded Monday night, so that'll be coming. I'm kidding, sort of.
yeah,
I have a pretty,
not really.
I have a pretty documented reputation of saying things like that, and then that kind of produces trades. On the Hawks side, this week, actually, in Vegas, I had to record 3 podcasts in one day because the Hawks did a move like every 4 hours. So oh, I God. Had to, I would record, I'd post, I'd leave the room, and like an hour later, they'd make another move, and I had to go back and re-record and repost. And it was like a comedy of errors. So hopefully the Braves won't do that to me. But
that's how they space out their moves a little bit more than that.
Not put them in one day, like the Donaldson McCann move over the winter, when it was like, oh, they did all their stuff in one day and then didn't make a move for 3 months. That was fun.
Yeah.
all for good now, though. But anyway, Scott, thank you.
It makes it real easy to do a podcast when you have all of like 80% of your off-season moves come within literally 45 minutes of each other.
Yeah, it was within like an hour and whatever it was.
Anyway.
All right, man. Well, thank you for joining me as always. And apologies for my bleary-eyed state. I am definitely in zombie mode right now, having coming off of 11 days in Vegas, and I need to take a nap or 7. But here we are, and thank you for joining me as always, my friend. Please plug yourself. And we talked about the podcast earlier. Please subscribe to this podcast as always. But Scott, tell people where they can find your work if they want to find it.
Yeah, be sure to keep checking out the site, and then on Twitter, ScottColeman55.
Follow Scott, our number one guy on the West Coast. So
that's right.
When there are games in San Diego and there are late night games, we often rely on Scott. I was actually out there and was awake and probably could have helped you. So my apologies on that, but here we are.
You're in Vegas. It's all good.
I was, and time is just a magazine in Vegas.
Yes.
All right. As for everybody else, thank you for listening to the show. Please subscribe. Please subscribe, rate, review, and all that fun stuff. And we'll see you all next week.